This is the June 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Jim McCormick. He's at agmarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Garrett Toy joins us from agtradertalk.com in Warren, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is here from globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Jim and Garrett, let's get a list of items from you to talk about. I know that Mike's going to join us a bit later in the program. Jim, I think I'll start with you. What's on your list this week?
Well, I think one of the major ones we're probably going to talk about is China. Are they actually in the market? Or, you know, this talk earlier in the week, they were kicking the tires into beans, what that might mean for the market near term, and how quick could we actually expect them to come into the market this upcoming year?
Garrett Toy on your list is what this week?
Yeah, I think it's you look at China, and I think you also look at the end of month reports. Even though last year kind of tempered expectations what to expect, at least for acreage, until we get to the August WASD and the FSA acres. But we can start seeing these forecasts into pollination and entering into the last half of the growing season.
So, Jim McCormick, let's pick up with you on China. Were they in the market at all in the last week and a half or 2 weeks?
They were in the market. Now, earlier in the week, there was all sorts of rumors that kind of got the market to rally for at the beginning of the week on reports in the cash market that China was in looking at purchasing beans. We never could get any hard confirmation from our cash contacts, but this morning, the USDA on their flash reporting system confirmed that China did buy 4.8 million bushels of new crop beans from the United States. Okay. And then there was also some unknown destinations buying another 4.4 million bushels. So hopefully that's a good sign China's in. Now, what I'm talking about, Todd, is a little bit of a wild card is how the China dynamics work. You remember back in the fall, China said they're going to buy 12 million metric tons of beans. And they're going to buy 25 million metric tons of new crop beans. They did buy that 12 million, but it was all done by a political buy. What I mean by that is they never adjusted their tariffs. So the only way it could justify buying the beans is they overpaid for them and they bought the U.S. beans. Okay. But this purchase here now, is it the Chinese government buying it or is it the Chinese processors buying it? Because when we made this deal a couple of weeks back now, there was a thought that China said, the administration said China was going to buy 25 million metric tons of new crop beans and up to 17 billion of additional ag goods. That's what the USDA or the government said. The Chinese said they're going to buy up to $30 billion of goods on the prerequisite that the US was going to lower the tariffs on $30 billion worth of Chinese goods. So we're getting this purchase, which is very good. But I don't know if you can reach that 25 million without the lowering of the tariffs of the Chinese imports of our tariffs that they charge our beans coming in, because essentially we're not going to be competitive. So that's where, you know, seeing these purchases is a good sign. I'm hoping it's the beginning of a stronger purchase program, or is it just kicking the tires and we're going to have to wait to find out what happens? Because the only other point I want to make, Todd, is the next time President Trump and President Xi meet, it's in late September, which means the Chinese have quite a big window to actually make these purchases or even start to purchase this if they want to do it right in front of the Chinese summit.
Just for clarification's purpose on the Chinese tariffs as it's related to soybeans, China does have an import tariff on soybeans coming in from the United States. If their state-owned agencies bring those in, those don't necessarily have to be paid for any reason because it is just a swap within the government. If it was, as you're suggesting, a commercial side that was importing them, they could waive them, but there is a tariff that's is expected to be collected on those. Those are two really big different things. And I'm wondering, Garrett, when you think about China as it's related to the coming marketing year, how worried you might be, or maybe you're really confident that they will be into the marketplace.
No, I had a lot of uncertainty whether they were going to, there's no financial or there's no, repercussions if they don't make the purchases. And it, we had this yo-yo effect, this spring, February, we were going to have the meeting and it was canceled and we sold off soybeans and then we have the meeting. And then we come out and Secretary Bessent's comment was that soybeans are taken care of, even though details were unavailable after the meeting in China. So, the calendar kept ticking forward and they weren't buying anything. You're absolutely right. State agencies don't have to pay the tariffs. And that's the thing, even after the meeting from between Xi and Trump, usually in the past, whenever they would meet, they would make some sort of symbolic gesture purchase, and that didn't happen after this meeting. And so we kept moving the calendar forward and they hadn't purchased. I do think the timing is interesting. I mean, U.S. beans have been competitive with South American beans, non-Chinese destinations because of those tariffs. That was kind of evidence today because we had 12-week highs in old crop export sales that, were competitive versus Brazil. But, is it coincidental that President Trump and Iran signed this MOU last week and now China starts buying U.S. beans again? I mean, I'm wondering if there was some sort of Chinese influence to, end the situation in Iran, sort of thing. Purely speculation on my part, but I think the timing is interesting that why now, all of a sudden is that this may be the ceremonial purchase because of, of wrapping up this Iran situation.
Are you worried that it is only the ceremonial purchase in that case?
I like to believe that people are committed to their word. I mean, they bought the 12 million metric ton, even though they probably didn't have to. I think this is a good step, especially this will, I'm fully expecting bean acres to go up at the end of the month report, and this tempers some of the, this could temper some of the bearishness of a bearish acreage report. If you look at new crop bean spreads, they're starting to tighten up. We're kind of at a juncture where, new crop bean spreads were starting to move wider right about the same time they did this point last year when China was not around. And now new crop bean spreads are starting to firm up here, telling us that, maybe the market believes that they're going to be around or they're going to make, they're at least going to make an attempt to their commitments. So, again, I'm not necessarily writing it in pen because, there's no system here, phase one trade deal. There's a system that if they fail to meet their commitments, this is purely a gentleman's agreement, if you will. Obviously there can be punitive tariffs from the U.S. side of things, but this isn't like the phase one trade deal, but it's a move in the right direction.
It's not written down. There is no pen to paper on this one, Jim. I think maybe the 12 there might have been, but the 8 million metric tons kind of got lost in Jan, February, March. I don't recall whether that came out of China or whether that came out of the White House, but it didn't materialize. So we'll have to watch that as well. And I guess it just all means that every day you have to watch the marketplace to see whether China's been in or not, doesn't it?
Exactly. I mean, even if it's in paper or even if it's written down, we saw that during the first Trump administration, they did not reach their targets. It's something if you're a producer, you got to keep your eye on it right now. I'm like Garrett, I got to be optimistic the Chinese are going to try to do it. There's a lot of political, ramifications. I think, Garrett, you're very accurate. It's interesting you brought it up. I've always told people, I always thought the Chinese are the ones that are pulling the strings behind the negotiations. The Chinese buy a lot of oil from the Iranians. They wanted that solved. On the other hand, we are trying to diversify from rare earth stod. But it's going to take years and years to do it. In the meantime, the Chinese kind of got us by the Achilles heel. If they really wanted to play hardball, they could stop shipping the rare earths like they did about a year ago and throw us into a major problem especially after all the munitions we used in Iran. So it is kind of interesting that Garrett made a point. Maybe that was part of the deal where, you know, China said, hey, you get the deal done, President Trump, we'll start up on that 25 million metric tons. You never know, because none of this is in writing. This is all just pure speculation, Todd.
All right. Turn your attention to something that will be in writing, Garrett. That's the end of the month reports. Both the acreage and grain stocks figures are due out. Do you think there will be many changes in the acreage report as USDA tries to tally up, and already has, actually? They've collected the data to the best of my knowledge. What kind of corn soybeans were planted across the nation?
Last year, really, you fool me once, came on you, fool me twice, came on me. And I just think that, I don't know what the USDA is going to print. Nobody knows. The bias is, considering the higher input costs, that bean acres increased slightly, corn acres may increase or decrease. I wouldn't be surprised to see them lower. But this depends on what the whole acreage pie. But at the end of the day, you know, there was such a big miss last year because of the lack of farmer participation. Obviously the USDA has lost the handle on their ability to monitor the situation. So what I'm telling people is it's kind of like the FSA data, is that whatever the USDA prints is probably going to be the minimum. You know, you're probably not going to see acres go down from there. So it just depends on how big of an increase that you're going to see at the end of the month relative to what the FSA acres are going to show in August. The big thing is there going to be many changes? I don't think so. I mean, if you just look at the general trend of the WASD over the course of the year, there hasn't been many changes at all. I mean, even though, you know, corn exports have been running well above the USDA's pace, they hadn't adjusted the numbers. And then when they do, they offset with ethanol, you know. So, I mean, at the end of the day, carryout really doesn't change. And I don't know if that's a function of the budget cuts it doesn't have anything to do with sampling, because that's the World Ag Outlook Board, but it just feels like budget cuts and that sort of thing, is that they don't really, these USDA reports really don't want to rock the boat as much as they used to, whether that's intentional or if it's because of budget cuts.
Yeah, so USDA NAS does all the sampling. For instance, with the grain stocks report, they're doing the surveys as well. As you pointed out, with farmers, as it's related to what they are putting into the ground, Jim. And then as you look forward into those reports, I know you're have been thinking about them, probably have seen a few numbers. What are the guesses like at this point that you're hearing?
Well, we'll get the hard numbers next week, Todd. I think all the press is asking for the numbers on Tuesday, Wednesday, I think is when when they're going to be gathered. I think in general, the bias is going to be somewhere between 94 and 95. I think it's going to be kind of where that number is going to fall. There's probably going to be some outliers that think we went way below 94. I'm in that 94 and a half camp personally. I think we're down a little bit, but the fact of the matter is American producers like to plant corn. A lot of the big I states, fertilizer is pre-bought over the winter and fall, so I don't think there's a huge adjustment. Then we're also going to get that quarterly grain stock report. There's always been a debate all year long, Scott, Todd, about what did we feed? The feed and residual numbers, 745 million bushels higher year on year. We do know the cattle's a lot higher, heavier weight than they were a year ago. Is that enough to justify that increase? We'll hopefully get some clarity on that number as well. You know, this report, you know, could surprise people. The government has been very hesitant to make some adjustments. So if they would make a hard adjustment, the market's going to react to it, even if they're going to end up correcting it down the line. So we are going to set up for a little bit of volatility, because remember, we have the report on Tuesday, we trade Wednesday, Thursday, then we're off for the 3-day, 4th of July holiday. So a lot of volatility could be building as we end the month of June.
Garrett, speaking of that grain stocks report and what the feed and residual number might look like, you are a beef producer. From what you know of yourself and the industry, are beef producers feeding too heavy enough weights at this point that the rate of gain is so much less that that they really could use that much grain?
I've ran the math on it. You know, you calculate the number of reduced number of head, and you add, you know, feeding cattle to 1,600 or 1,700 pounds. Obviously, you can't account for the residual aspect of feed residual, but by my calculations, you know, you're looking at like a 350 to 400 million bushel year-over-year increase versus the 700 that the USDA has dialed in. You know, so that's kind of the cushion that I'm looking for, but obviously you don't know what the USDA considers residual is either. So, you know, if they do consider that residual, then there probably won't be much changes, but I've prepped people for, there could be a couple hundred million bushel, you know, difference here just because of the cattle. But I mean, if it weren't for the, if weren't for the heavier cattle, I mean, if you just look at total beef production and how we're able to maintain relatively steady beef production in the face of lower numbers, it's largely because of this dairy beef cross and the heavier cattle. And that's the only thing that's really kind of saved us. So,
Jim, tell me about the competition coming out of Brazil into the next growing season and how much of an issue a fertilizer is in the first part of their growing season compared to the second. Corn is the primary and the second for the export market. And how you see the export window for soybeans. In the past couple of years, it has shrunk up. And this is coming back to when China will actually start taking soybeans in the new crop year, because they've been able to export later into the year, calendar year, and begun exporting sooner too, which closed up our window. What do you think?
Well, in general, that window's been closing. In general, they've been taking more and more of our market share, Todd. I would argue in the next 3, 5, 10 years that is going to continue. We're going to probably continue to lose more and more market share to the Chinese, to South America, as China tries to disengage from us, as well as try to engage with all that investment in South America. As for next year, it's going to be interesting. A lot of that fertilizer South America does get, they do get from the Middle East. Now, obviously, the Middle East is open. The crude oil market's breaking hard as we speak. The question now is, how much real damage has been done to those fertilizer producers in the Middle East? And what, you know, how quick it can spin that back up. In general, I think what you're going to see is that bean acre is going to continue to creep up, but what you're going to see is a much slower pace because of the high cost of fertilizer. And just the other problem you're seeing, Todd, in South America is the bankruptcies are spiking. They are having a very hard time financing their crops. The big difference, we're paying high price for inputs. They're paying a high price for inputs. The thing that's killing the Brazilians, from what I see, is it's the high interest rate. We think our interest rates are high where they're at. They're paying double what we're paying. And that is putting an economic strain on them as well, which will probably cap their expansion near term. But, you know, that trend, as they say, is your friend. And I believe in the long run, it's going to expand. And that's why I think this renewable diesel, biodiesel is so critical. And you're seeing that investment. And I think that is what we need to continue to see to kind of offset that lost demand we're going to have as we move through the next 3 to 5, 10 years.
45Z, the RVO, were the question I were going to ask you about, Garrett, following this along, which was, if not in the export market for soybeans, or as many that is, whether it's competition from Brazil or China not purchasing what they said they would from the United States, domestically, crush has been good. Do you expect that capacity can be built out fast enough to make up for any losses we might have on the world marketplace?
Yeah, I'd like to go back a little bit before we go to the 45Z. Jim was right. I mean, it's kind of interesting to me. I find it humorous is that China has tried to diversify away from the United States as being a sole supplier. And what have they done is they've put all their eggs in the South American basket and have diversified buying all their soybeans from South America. As far as the tail on the Brazilian crop, the Brazilian bean lineup right now is 11 million metric tons. What was it this day last year? 11 million metric tons. So the bean export program with bigger crop, the tail should be fairly similar to what it was last year. Now, as far as 45Z and the biodiesel, the market's trying. I mean, we've got massive crush margins out here, and we can only run these plants. These plants have been running at full tilt for 13 straight months. We've had record crush. There's only so much we can do without increased capacity, and that's what the market's trying to do is encourage those to build more crush capacity because, you look at the historical charts of, soybean market share, 2016 to 2018, it went to South, it went to Brazil, and they haven't looked back. And even though the seems like the Brazilian or excuse me, the Chinese demand has flattened essentially, or has not nearly growing as the pace that it was, say, 10 years ago. Brazil has it captured. Now, that works until it doesn't. It's an El Niño year. If we have a weather issue, that sort of thing. And I still go back to, like the 2012 drought. We lost the U.S. corn, or we lost the U.S. corn export market in 2012 because all our buyers realized that, the South American corn cracked just as good as the U.S. corn. It's taken us 12 years to get that business back, and that doesn't work for some of us. We don't have that many years left doing this. So, I do think that the 45Z and the biofuels can make up for it. But it's going to take time, and who knows? I mean, it'll take just as much time for that export business to come back.
Mike Zuzulo now joins us. Hey, thanks, Mike, for being with us. I know you've been busy for the day. We've been talking about 45Z, and I had asked whether or not it could help to make up any shortfall we might have in the exports over time. I'm not sure that the coming year that's the case, but domestically, whether we could develop enough demand usage that that would be the case, and is capacity really just the constraint at this time?
Yeah, I think capacity is the constraint, and I do think that there is an uncertainty that I have, Todd, when it comes to the Chinese demand side. And I say that because I was hoping that by this point in 2026, they would be done with liquidating their sow herd some, and they'd be on more of a mindset of steady as she goes with their livestock production. But I don't think they're there yet. And some of the major crush margins in China right now, in some of their major provinces, I should say, are in deep in the red, deep negative. In fact, some of them have gone below the lows of 2025. And so I do think that the purchases this week were bought for more political reasons. I think the question mark for me is that do they really have the structure set up for the livestock demand that we have been used to? And I think we all know in the commodity business that when we're in the oil seeds that they're working very aggressively to A, utilize more of South America, and B, try and become more and more self-sufficient by 2030. And that's just right around the corner. So it's going to be close, I think, is how I would answer it right now.
Yeah, so we'll be looking at that long term. Let's stay with kind of the feed demand, but switch to cattle on feed report, which came out Thursday afternoon. Tell me about those numbers.
Well, the big thing that we have to keep in mind is that USDA has, and this is what they came out with on the report, 102, just a little over 102% on feed. As of June 1, actual number 11.682 million head, trade thinking about 11.73 million. We have 2 million more head on feed, and yet USDA is still projecting that we're going to be down in production, and year-to-date slaughter is down still about 9%, production down about 6%. With higher weights. And it's hard for me to see how we're going to square that circle of having a big increase in fourth quarter production. They actually have the fourth quarter production for commercial beef at almost the exact same level as the fourth quarter production of 2025. That doesn't add up to me as far as what my clients are telling me, as far as what they have on feed or what they see in the feedlots that they think is on feed. So I think the cattle on feed report was, I think, mostly neutral. The placements came in at 90%. That was the low end. The marketings, though, also came on the very low end at 88.2%. I don't think either fed the bear or fed the bull. And so we go back to, I think, the top three factors when it comes to the consumption side, stock market, that is still very bullish because of new highs that we've made. The gas prices, which are down, I think, around 50 cents versus a month ago nationally, and have gone below $4 a gallon. And then what we talk about, the S word, which I don't bring up unless I'm forced to, when it comes to what's going on in Texas and at the U.S.-Mexico border. No news is good news. No new cases since June 12th. I really think that set the market up for a very good move this past week. And I'm hopeful that this cattle on feed report will allow us to go up and test those old highs.
If we're going to test those new highs in the cattle market, what happens with corn and soybeans with what appear to be really good conditions? I know you've been traveling in your part of the world. The last time I was out there at the beginning of June, that was a stunningly good-looking corn crop, surprised me as I was driving through. Is it still that way?
It is. I would say I just got back from the Emporia area in north of Wichita on Thursday afternoon, and I would say that the crop has never looked so green, but I would also say that there are many more wet spots and drowned out spots than I was expecting. I literally could see within 3 miles of my drive down towards Emporia and over towards the edge of the Flint Hills. Corn that was getting ready to tassel and corn that was barely out of the ground and maybe 6 inches high. So it kind of gives you an idea of the early planting one out again. If you waited, then you really got stuck in the mud, literally. So I think it's a lot like the rest of the corn crop. It's going to be really good if we stay cool and wet. But if we have any kind of heat whatsoever, it's really going to struggle, especially if that heat comes anywhere around July 4th, would be my expectation.
Broad macroeconomic thoughts under the new Federal Reserve head, under Mr. Warsh. What do you think?
Yeah, this was one of the three big reasons why I was disappointed with the Thursday close and the wheat turning from leader to the upside to the second leader to the downside, soybean oil being the number one leader to the downside. Warsh is saying he's the new sheriff in town, and this market's going to be data driven, whether you like it or not. It's going to be supply demand driven, and we're not going to talk. We at the Fed are not going to talk as much as we used to help guide you through the questionable times. So it is going to increase more volatility, but I have to say, I love this kind of mindset. I wish we'd get it in the livestock and grains because I think it'll put a real kink in and chink in the armor for the algo traders, Todd. And I think that's one of the things where you and I've talked a lot about funds versus fundamentals, and we got to get back to those fundamentals somehow before we have another significant food crisis, if you ask me. But no question, the new 12-month high in the U.S. dollar was not what I wanted to see on Thursday, and I think that really dinged the wheat and took the market's focus away from extra heavy rainfall during wheat harvest. And I'm hearing back in your part of the country, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, really tough looking wheat, really short wheat, not going to be what it was the last 2 or 3 years ago. I talked to a good client in Rochelle area, averaged 105 bushels the last 3 years. He said he's going to be lucky to get 75, 80, he thinks, at this point. So I think the trade's going to have to pick that up again, probably next week if we see the rainfall totals that some of these models are projecting the next 7 days.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Jim McCormick at agmarket.net. I'll start with you. What's your final word for today?
Well, right now, I'm going to tell producers out there, prepare for some little bit of volatility. Market has had a pretty ugly slide here at the beginning of the month of June. Where I'm at, we went from incredibly wet April to incredibly dry May to a very wet June. Does that bring some volatility into July? Do we swing back dry? What only time will tell. But if you've got some old crop corn and you have to get it moved, I would encourage people to get the orders working. Like I said, this report, we've got a lot about next couple of weeks, a lot of headlines that could drive the market. Get your orders working and be prepared to sell into it.
Mike Zuzulo at globalcomresearch.com, your final word for the day.
Yeah, the big thing to watch the next 3 weeks, Todd, for me, continues to be the spreads. You notice the July D soft red wheat spread has gotten back to about 25 under. That's the highest since April of 2025. Meanwhile, July D's corn, old crop, new crop spreads are languishing near their lows for their contracts, but we've got delivery coming up. I still think we've got a tighter supply in the cash market than USDA is suggesting from 25, 26. We'll see if that's accurate as we get to the end of the month here.
And Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com in Warren, Illinois, your final word.
Yeah, I don't have much to say on old crop. We've been sold out for 3, 4 weeks now. But new crop, I've been of the bias in corn is that, in reality, if it weren't for this Iranian war, we never should have had a chance of selling $5 corn. So, we're thankful for that opportunity. Unfortunately, this is going to be another tough year. We had chances to sell decent corn prices, but our margins are still going to be squeezed. Even though the paper crude oil market is lower at $76 as we speak, the physical market's telling the fundamental market's selling something completely different. And if any something should happen to go awry on this MOU, then maybe that will fire up the inflation trade again. But right now, corn market's going to have its work cut out for them. This old crop carryout that still has to move between now and the end of August is going to act like a lead weight on its ability to rally.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like online at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzulo, Garrett Toy, and Jim McCormick. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.